Hi, this is Anita Vermalalian. I am the CEO and founder of Camelback Productions, as well as Arizona Land Consulting. And you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Yeah. My name is Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with talented and interesting individuals linked to the global Indian and South Asian community. It's informal and informative, adding insights to our evolving cultural expressions, where each person can proudly say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. Hi, everyone. On this episode of Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing, a conversation with the CEO of Arizona Land Consulting and Camelback Productions, Anita Vermalalian. Stay tuned. Hey, as always, thank you for listening to the show and for passing it along to your friends and family and for rating and kindly reviewing. It's very much appreciated. And just like your interest in this show, it seems like much of what we seek, both personally and professionally, is summed up by the word value. We want our time, our effort, and our resources to hopefully be spent in ways that are meaningful and add value to our portfolio of life. Now, in a way, successfully finding those opportunities to build this portfolio and that cachet of value takes a pretty seasoned blend of experience, analysis, instinct, and creativity. So for Anita Vermalalian, this blend has actually translated to some terrific achievements in finding that value, not just to reflect her business sensibilities, but informed by her background and identity as well. Anita is an Indian American who grew up with an entrepreneurial spirit, and after working closely with her dad, who established a thriving Arizona real estate business, and inspired by her mom, who was a practicing doctor, Anita launched Arizona Land Consulting as a vehicle to help businesses connect and find great value in the commercial real estate world. Now, managing a portfolio that exceeds over $1 billion requires an incredible amount of curation with various partners, exceptional timing, the instinct to navigate through local policies, and being thoughtful about long-term sustainability. So naturally, Anita's success in this arena has bled into her other passion to launch Camelback Productions, a film company that's committed to represent the rich and diverse narratives of South Asians in cinema. And they're poised, of course, to launch their first film this March at South by Southwest called Doin' It, featuring Lily Singh. It's also incredibly important to note how Anita's work resonates deeply in two worlds of real estate and movie making that often are dominated by men. So an Indian American woman helping to undo lots of bias and break new ground, by the way, very much pun intended on that one, is both refreshing and desperately needed. We met up first for coffee last year and recently had a chance to catch up and share a conversation about it all. Now, usually when I hear real estate and movie making success in the same sentence, there's mainly one descriptive word that comes to my mind. And so I wanted to know if Anita thinks of herself as a mogul.
Yeah, no, I think mogul, you know, is always the word people want to be used when they're in real estate,
right?
For sure. So I like that word. But, you know, I think for me, it's mainly about looking at different investment opportunities, whether it's in real estate, whether it's in film, and it's, you know, looking for opportunities. Where can we find a project that there's going to be value in? Are we, you know, buying a property that's going to appreciate, that's, you know, in a key area that has a lot of growth potential? Are we investing in a movie that, otherwise wouldn't have gotten made? Is it a story that needs to be told? So it's really about finding the opportunities. So for me, it's, you know, where can we find the right opportunity, whether it's in film, whether it's in real estate. So that's, you know, that's kind of what I try to focus on.
When you think about that, like sort of you're using experience and instinct and analysis to make those kinds of judgments. You know, for you, when you talk about this instinctively with other people and you're sharing this, you know, do they find that this is a surprise at all? Is it a surprise to you that you've been able to sort of like garner some of this and make some of those right bets, if you will?
Yeah, it's definitely been a surprise. I think, you know, when I started my real estate business, just to give you a background, I've been in real estate for the last 12 years or so. My family has been in the real estate business for 40 years. So it's kind of something that I've grown up around.
Yeah.
About 5 years ago, I started my own company. And I think the timing of that was just incredible. It was right before the pandemic started, and post pandemic, you know, what happened in the real estate market, particularly in Arizona, where we were investing, it's, you know, something that I never really thought would happen. And it, the growth that we experienced and the appreciation some of our properties experienced, it's just been mind blowing, to be honest, and the development that's happened. So it wasn't, you know, something that I expected to happen so quickly. It's something I thought would maybe happen over, you know, a 10-20 year horizon, but it happened in maybe, you know, a 2 year horizon. Right. So that's been incredible. And I think for me to then transition into the film space, that's definitely something that I never expected. It was never really part of the plan.
And yet that's what moguls do, right?
Yeah, no. So we were able to, you know, pivot into that space and find this opportunity, which exists. And, you know, kind of there's this void for the South Asian community within the film space. And so, you know, we're so excited that we have a chance to, you know, kind of bolster what's happening and, you know, kind of promote and fund some of the projects for the community. So it's been amazing, definitely surprised by it for sure.
Yeah.
To answer your question though.
You know, with that same thought of finding opportunity, right? Like, and specifically when it comes to, you know, anything, but certainly in investing in real estate and even thinking about film, you know, like many things, there's bound to be someone who wins and someone who loses. And in the end, is this just the inevitability of free markets and capitalism? And how do you maybe grapple sometimes with, you know, perhaps the opportunities that don't go right for yourself and even for others, for that matter?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, like you said, there's always, whenever you're investing in anything, there's always risks, there's inherent risks, and no one can predict with 100% certainty what the outcome's going to be. I think for me, what I do and what helps me is just, you know, doing as much research as I can, doing as much due diligence, aligning myself with experts if I'm not necessarily an expert in that area, and just, you know, kind of studying the fundamentals and making sure that you're covered as much as you can.
Yeah.
And I think to me, that's, you know, you do the best you can as far as doing your due diligence and researching what you're investing in. And I think the more you do in a certain field, you know, for instance, in real estate, we've been mindful to focus in certain areas and certain communities and really truly become experts in those areas.
Yeah.
And I think that helps us kind of mitigate the risk, because if you know, you know, it's my phrase is be an inch wide and a mile deep. Mm. So not versus being a mile wide and an inch deep. I don't want to have superficial knowledge of a lot of different things. I want to have very deep knowledge of very specific things.
Sure.
And so to me, that has kind of offered a lot of protection in the investments that we make. And so that's kind of the philosophy that we follow. But, you know, there are times where there are things we've done where, you know, you look back and you're like, maybe that wasn't the right property to buy or the right project to do.
Yeah.
And I think you just learn from each one. You learn, you know, what you should avoid, you know, red flags, things like that.
It's funny because, you know, when people hear the word mogul or they hear, think about real estate and investing, and they don't always necessarily equate compassion with that. You know, is there a space for warmth and compassion when it comes to sort of like being in this space? And do people forget that sometimes?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think compassion is such an important part of what I do. And I think for us, we have so many investors that invest alongside of us. And I think having that compassion, being able to connect with people and, you know, get that, have that trust from people that you're truly looking out for them. You're truly, you know, researching everything and doing, you know, kind of protecting their investment. I think that's been such a big part of our success. And so compassion always plays into it. And you have to be compassionate about the type of work you're doing, the types of projects you're building. You know, what's that project going to do to the community? Is it going to help the community? Is it bringing, you know, tax revenue and additional benefit to the community? If you're doing a movie, is that movie, you know, is that going to help, you know, the community you're trying to represent? So I think compassion is always such a big part of any project you do.
You, you know, there's always this, I think, you know, kind of treading this fine line and finding balance sometimes between drive and ambition and even instinct and impulsivity sometimes with patience and observation and sort of like the ability to let an opportunity go, you know, if the timing's not right. I imagine that this is something that you've had to practice and learn and, you know, really grow into. And, you know, I'm curious if there have been accelerators for that, whether it's your family and their experience or, you know, just even the you know, parenting for that matter, like being able to sort of like help you practice that and iterate and get better at that.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think my parents have been so instrumental in my life and decisions that I make. My mom is, she's a retired physician now, much like same industry as you. And so when I was growing up, you know, she was the head of her department. She was an immigrant from India and, you know, away from her family in a very male dominated field. So I kind of grew up seeing her just be this role model for me. And so, you know, and my dad, he's created a very successful real estate business. And I would say, you know, real estate mogul is a good term to describe him. And so I think for me, kind of seeing how they've done things and been very careful in how they've different investments they've made and different paths they've chosen, I think has guides my decisions as well. And I think also knowing in real estate, there's so many cycles, you know, you have ups and downs, and when things are high and good, you just can't get too used to things being like that all the time. And I think having seen different cycles, you know, with my dad's experience has helped me stay grounded and not, you know, just get too impulsive when things are good and go crazy. So, you know, just kind of stay grounded and only look at, you know, certain opportunities that you know will pay off and, you know, feel pretty safe.
You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, we'll come back to our conversation with Anita Verma Lalian. Stay tuned. Conversation. It's the antidote to apathy and the catalyst for relationships. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
I'm Lily Singh, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Hi, I'm Congressman Ro Khanna, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Welcome back to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's rejoin our conversation with the CEO of Arizona Land Consulting and Camelback Productions, Anita Verma Lalian.
You know, being grounded is probably so relevant when it comes to making sound decisions, but also being, like you mentioned earlier, very mindful of kind of like what the footprint is. And I mean, especially in the Southwest, I mean, you're working primarily in an area that you know, where land and economics and climate are so critically kind of woven together. How do you value resources like water and displacement and even think of them as sort of like a new currency, you know, kind of going forward, especially in this age where, you know, everything seems like it has such deep impact, especially on, you know, both small and large scale.
Yeah, I know that's a great question. And I think for in Phoenix, it's such a fast, it's a rapidly growing city. We're even the fastest growing city for the last, you know, 10 years or so. The Maricopa County, our county, it's broken all sorts of records in terms of growth. And I think with that comes challenges. And I think the biggest challenge that we've faced is infrastructure. How do we keep up with water demands, you know, even power demands? How do we grow? And I think we've experienced a lot of challenges. The good news is, you know, when you look at Arizona, I think a lot of things about water get shown in the media that are not completely accurate. I think in Arizona, water there are some challenges because we're expanding in new ways. The models are a little bit dated with how water's, you know, kind of allocated. But if you look at the overall water supply in Arizona, 70% of all water goes towards farming and agriculture. Yeah. And we currently don't, as those farms retire, our model doesn't capture for that water to kind of bring it back into the system and apply it to different uses. So it's just a matter of kind of updating some of the models. We're looking at different water sources. We have a lot of farmland in various parts of the state that have very large water basins below them. So it's a matter of kind of getting some of those water, some of that water allocation into the system. So there's a lot of things that are happening that aren't necessarily being talked about. But I think right now we're just very mindful that anything we buy, we make sure it has water for the intended use.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we're buying a residential property, we have to make sure it has a certificate of a 100-year certificate of assured water supply. If we've been buying a lot of industrial land, the water requirements are a lot lower for that. So we've just been very mindful. That's something that is the very first question that we look at is, what's the water? Do we have the water we need?
Right.
And, you know, how are we going to move forward with this development?
It's almost like, you know, the question of the opportunity and sort of like the investment piece is there, but you know, the second, the third question are, you know, sort of hopefully top of mind as well when it comes to sort of, you know, preservation, when it comes to sustainability, you know,
right.
they probably have to enter every conversation. I'm curious now, what did you perhaps have to unlearn about, you know, pivoting or even just taking on a role as, you know, in forming a production company or a media production company?
Yeah.
What were some of the things that you maybe had to, in some ways, relearn or unlearn or sure. or newly learn?
There's, you know, in a lot of ways, the way that we're structuring our production company is similar to how we do our real estate, you know, kind of how we set up those investments. So as far as the structure of how we invest in films, a lot of that has been similar, but the industry is very different.
Yeah.
The returns are different. The risk profile is different. And I think that's probably been one of the hardest things to communicate to other investors, as well as, you know, in real estate, you're, you know, the risks in, we're in the fastest growing city, the risks are relatively low. Whereas in film, it's, you know, there, you just never know, you know,
right.
you could do everything right and you just can't control the outcome as much. So I think, you know, how we kind of handled that is by partnering with people in the industry that have amazing track records, that know what they're doing, that have had a lot of success. We just produced our first movie in the summer of this year, and the production companies that we partnered with, you know, are Oscar-winning producers. They've had amazing success on different movies. We're partnering with WME to help us with the sale. You know, they're kind of leaders in the industry. So I think for me, learning, you know, who the right players are in the industry and, you know, kind of partnering with them, that's kind of been my biggest, you know, kind of strategy there.
Yeah.
And I think just learning about the trends in the market, you know, how independent films work, how, you know, kind of how you structure them, how you exit them. That's kind of been, you know, kind of the biggest learning curve and just, you know, understanding the market. But yeah, it's different, but it's really exciting at the same time.
Yeah. And it sounds like it's definitely something that's driven both by the opportunity, but also by the passion you have for this. And then on top of that, in the end, it's still all about people, right? So developing relationships and really sort of understanding how those relationships can flow and be sustained for future partnerships, I'm imagining too.
For sure.
You know, in the end, a lot of what we're talking about here is about storytelling. And, you know, for Camelback, is the idea to tell more diverse stories and invest in films and projects that can do that and therefore resonate powerfully with audiences? Or is it actually to tell more diverse stories in a way that generates and gathers power in the industry?
Yeah, I would say it's probably both. It's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I think the main goal is to tell stories that are not, are, you know, potentially not going to get told if we don't help get them, you know, kind of the financing and help put them together.
Yeah.
And I think it's also this, you know, at the same time, we also want to do it in a way where we are having a big impact and we actually are making a change. And there is, you know, power involved as well. And I think for me, the goal for Camelback is to have, we're in the process of creating our fund, and we want that fund to be, you know, a significant fund where we come in a big way and can really truly make a difference. Mm-hmm. And I think doing a movie here or there, I don't think will have the impact. So my goal is to do multiple movies, you know, 10, 20 movies, and, you know, really hopefully create change and have the industry start changing. And with that, you know, would come power.
I imagine that these stories, if they are told by a, you know, established production house or an established distribution company, you know, they do have the power behind them of that experience, yep. Right? Whereas, you know, a new sort of player here, but yet one that has the identity, you know, behind it and the, you know, the passion behind it, there probably has to be some crossover with strategy and timing and being able to now sort of like think about that carefully. When you do think about this, is that the end goal, to be able to hold those levers of power in a way that then you can make those decisions? And I mean, I've asked this to many artists that, you know, it's different when you're actually holding those decision-making levers and even the financing levers a little bit differently. Right. Is that the ultimate, you know, hope here?
I think so. I think that's one of our goals for sure. I think, you know, that the ultimate goal is just to have more representation. Mm. And for, especially when it comes to the next generations, you know, for my kids, for instance, I want to make sure that they have the same opportunities that anybody else would have. Yeah. And they shouldn't ever be held back because of their race. And I think that's, you know, really the bigger goal is I want community representation. And I think, you know, with that, you know, power is important.
Yeah.
And I think so that ultimately is one of our goals for sure.
When it comes to that representation and thinking of, you know, how it works perhaps in other sectors. I mean, one of the things that comes to mind for me is, you know, how in civic engagement and politics, you know, there's a actual power and real value to building coalitions and caucuses and mm-hmm. and finding partnerships in other communities. Yep. Is there at all a parallel? I mean, this is obvious when it comes to not just the South Asian community, but the Asian American community, the Hawaiian Pacific Islander community, and somehow that umbrella then, you know, sort of like all gets lumped together. Is there a parallel at all in thinking about this in media and storytelling, or is there a careful and thoughtful way that you have to, in some ways, build the umbrella, but not forget about the uniqueness of each particular group?
Yeah, no, I think there are similarities. I think the goal would be to, you know, slowly kind of build the umbrella. And I think if you look at the South Asian community, we don't typically support the arts. It's, you know, it's not something that people typically do because it's, you know, risky. And I think a lot of people don't go into the arts, which is, you know, one of the issues as well. So I think it's really to get the community to understand that, you know, if we can come together and start supporting each other and supporting some of these projects, we can truly make a change. So I think that is, you know, kind of, you know, one of the goals. And I think it is similar too when you look at politics or different industries where, you know, we may not be as represented. I think you have to start by, you know, kind of building these caucuses and getting mobilizing everyone. And I think it seems like, you know, the timing is good. I mm-hmm. think most people that I speak with feel similarly to how I do about this and feel passionately about it. And I think now's, you know, the right time for this movement.
You know, it seems like the pandemic and even sort of like I'm thinking about how things work. You know, we're sitting here talking in, you know, winter of 2024, and, you know, there's power of institutions and big productions, and yet the democratization of storytelling fits in the hand of someone's phone and on TikTok and, you know, in those kinds of ways. Is there power to both of, like, you know, how many people can tell a story at once and gain like millions of followers versus the way that it can happen with distribution and institutionalizing, you know, those things? Mm-hmm. Does there have to be sort of a marriage of both of those to really find success, especially when it comes to mm-hmm. representation?
Yeah, that's a good Good question. And I think that they both, I do think, you know, they're both are very important. And I do think at some point you kind of need to both need to complement each other. And, you know, I think it's amazing how, you know, with, you know, social media and things like that, you can get, you can access so many people, get points across so quickly. And I think that's a very valuable tool. And I think going forward, that's, you know, just going to continue to, it's going to continue to kind of grow in how powerful it is. And I think, you know, being able to kind of amplify what you're doing,
yeah,
on, you know, kind of on a bigger scale and, you know, amplify that message using social media, I think that's so important. So I do think, you know, both are really important. And I do agree that, you know, they both have to kind of work hand in hand.
You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, we'll come back to our conversation with Anita Verma Lalian. Stay tuned. Every story told is a lesson learned, and every lesson learned is a story waiting to be told. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hey, this is Cal Penn. I'm an actor, author, former public servant, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Hello, everyone. My name is Tam France.
Hey, this is Samir Gadia.
Hi, my name is Richa Morjani, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing with Abhay Dandekar.
Hi there, I'm Abhay Dandekar, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's rejoin our conversation now with Anita Verma Lalian.
You know, when I think about the caucus building, and especially in the beginnings of movements, and certainly, you know, media representation is nothing new, but it certainly has an evolving pattern for sure, both in the South Asian community and the Indian American community. But I want to ask you about that in particular, because does it at all create an eventuality of unwinding what you build in the umbrella, especially in this sort of South Asian bucket, when storytelling may mean something completely different to an Indian American or a Pakistani American or a Bangladeshi American or a Nepali American, Sri Lankan American? And does it behoove us at some point to, yes, gather South Asian stories, but also make sure that we're being thoughtful to, you know, specifics of identity?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And the community is so large and it's so different. You know, like you just mentioned, there's, you know, six different or seven, you know, however many different countries that represent South Asians. And I think even within, if you look at India, for instance, it's a huge country. Yeah. You know, people from, you know, certain parts of India can, you know, can pretty much be from two separate countries, you know, based on languages, you know, things like that.
Crazy, right? And I mean, even if I meet other people, if I were in India or Pakistan or Bangladesh, not one of those people ever calls themselves South Asian.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think that that's one of our goals, is to be mindful of that and tell as many different stories within the South Asian community as we can. And there's also different generations, you know, stories that my parents would tell, for instance, are going to be a lot different than, you know, maybe something that my kids, you know, would be interested in. Yeah. So I think there's so many different people, so many different ages, interests, and I think there's so many stories to tell. So we want to tell as many as we can, as many different stories as we can. But, and at the same time, I think one of my goals is to do it in a way where it's not necessarily just focused on like, this is a South Asian story. I want it more to be like, these are the stories of South Asians living in America. These are their experiences, and have them be American stories, highlighting different South Asian characters and stories, and kind of weaving that in. And I think in the movie that we just did, I think we did a good job of that, where it's a story of a South Asian woman growing up in the US and kind of shows the struggle she has with her, you know, very conservative South Asian upbringing and how that kind of plays into living in America. So we want to tell stories like that as well, where we, you know, kind of show how South Asians live in the U.S.
I guess at the end, right, like whether it's storytelling or investments or land, you have to look at its intrinsic value. And like anything else, at the end of the day, it's got to sell.
Right.
You know, so how do you, like you mentioned, there's so many stories to tell out there, but you want it to resonate with markets that are broad. Mm-hmm. How do you find ways to share things with that broad audience without losing the authenticity, the uniqueness? And, you know, at some point that I imagine that it is sort of an analysis and a risk you have to take to be able to say, hey, mm-hmm. is this going to land with everyone? Right. Or is it going to speak to only that that South Asian or that Indian American audience or that, you know, in a way, how do you balance those two things together to try and make sure that, again, you're going to get your return on your investment?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think that's one of the most challenging things that I face is it has to be a movie that will be a commercial success. Yeah. And, you know, you have to ensure that you're going to get a return. Otherwise, it's hard to keep getting investors and keep investing in movies. So I think for me, what I look at is this a commercial project? Is this going to appeal to a wider audience? It can't just be a South Asian audience. So the few projects we've done, we've been very mindful that they have a bigger, more commercial appeal, and they appeal to a bigger audience. And it wouldn't just be limited to the South Asian audience.
Yeah. I mean, the storytelling is going to resonate with anyone as opposed to just simply being in a niche area. When you think about this, you mentioned this having great impact on your own kids. You know, as a mom, as a leader, as someone who's cultivated a fair amount of now this cachet of experiences and someone who's, you know, challenging stereotypes, right? I mean, trying to beat away patriarchy with this and at the same time also make sure that it with a woman-led business, how do you prioritize which battles and which stereotypes to maybe break at once when you're trying to do so many, wear many different hats? Yeah. Try and make sure that you're paying attention to all the different hats that you wear. Is there a priority list for how to approach this?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's, you know, starting this production company, I think that's put a lot of pressure on me to really look at those priorities and focus on, you know, the top priorities because there's only so much you can do. And I think for me, family is always going to be my number one priority, making sure, you know, I'm taking care of, you know, my kids are kind of at that crucial age. So making sure their needs are taken care of. You know, fortunately, I have a very supporting husband who helps a lot with the kids and, you know, kind of allows me when I'm traveling and things like that, it kind of allows me a lot of freedom to do the things that I like to do. And then, you know, I have family support. My parents fortunately live in town. My sister lives in town. So I have a lot of support that way. But I think, you know, I have a real estate business, I have the production company. So I'm always just looking at, you know, kind of planning has been a very big part of what I do now since there's so much happening. So just focusing on the top priorities, you know, like if I have, you know, I'm working on a huge rezone right now. We're rezoning 2,000 acres from residential to industrial, and that takes a lot of time. So that's one of my top priorities. Yeah. It's one of the biggest projects I'm working on. And then, you know, for movies, it's like, you know, what are the top things? And whatever I'm not an expert in, I'm outsourcing it to someone who is and working, you know. So for me, my team, my partners, they're so important because they're, you know, the ones that allow me to do a variety of different things. So the partnerships I have, the team, you know, the people I work with, the people on my team, you know, that's so important that, you know, we're all in sync. And I have an amazing team, fortunately, that helps me do so many different things. And I think that's really, you know, kind of the main goal is having the right people to help you do what you need to do.
I'm curious because, like, you know, it sounds a lot like there's an intentionality and maybe even sort of a thoughtfulness to imagining how your kids would think of this, especially when they're, you know, when you're thinking of yourself of like what impact you're making on them, not just of what you do, but how you do it and sort of like the process behind it. It's not just simply the outcome, but the way in which you are, you know, prioritizing. So, you know, so that for them breaking stereotypes or when they're actually in a position to maybe do something somewhat similar, that it resonates with them and that has power yeah. as well. So I imagine that there is, or maybe it's unintentional that you make your way through that.
No, it's definitely intentional. I feel like one thing that my parents have always done, and I feel like that's framed how I think, is if there's a problem or if, you know, you want a change to happen, you can't just wait around and think someone else is going to do it. You really have to take action and try to make that change yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that's so important for my kids to see. And I want them to see that, you know, we are creating change, we're doing things, and we're, you know, breaking barriers in different things. You know, when I started my real estate business, it was in a very male dominated industry, you know, kind of a very, you know, older men for the most part. And I was, you know, when I started my company, everyone was, you know, kind of just shocked that, you know, I was a woman doing what I was doing. And I think to me, it was so important that my daughter saw that. Mm. So she feels like there's literally nothing that, you know, she can't do. She can do anything that she wants. And I want, you know, I want my kids to see that if, you know, you're not happy with how things are being done, or if you're feeling like, you know, there's a lack of representation or whatever it is, you can do things to cause change. You can, you know, be the catalyst for change. And so that's really important for me that they see that.
You know, at the end of the day, all of this is truly about people. And we've mentioned a couple times here, like, you know, building relationships, imprinting relationships, whether it's your kids or other people around you, and making that representation sort of last. And hopefully get to a point where, you know, it's sort of just so ingrained that there is, you know, it's sort of second nature for all of us with what we do, what we watch, et cetera. I'm curious, through all of this, what have you learned about cultivating trust? How do you go about, you know, making sure that trust is at the center of things that you do?
Yeah, I think that I would say credit my parents, who've, you know, always allowed me to kind of be my authentic self and live life on my own terms. And I think that is important. You know, whenever you're getting investors or, you know, partners, being who you are and being your authentic self, I think is always so important in getting people to trust you, and having, you know, values that you live your life by, being consistent. You know, for me, if I give someone my word, that's my bond, and I'm not going to ever go back on that. And I think that's just, you know, really, like, and I think having people know that you're always, you know, researching everything, looking into everything, doing all the due diligence you can, to me, that's how I know I get trust from people. You know, a lot of my investors are busy working professionals. They want to invest in different things, but they don't have the time to, you know, kind of go out and learn industries and all that. So I think they looked to me then. So that's really important for me, to be able to know that, you know, I'm vetting everything. I'm, you know, looking into every possible thing that I can. So that's, to me, that's kind of how I build trust. But I think mainly it comes down to being my authentic self. And I think that's how you kind of garner that trust.
Well, being authentic, doing your due diligence, and bringing as many people along for the ride is a great thing. Exactly. And, you know, certainly kudos and congratulations for everything. Anita, thank you so much for joining us. This was really a treat, and hopefully we can visit with you again down the road.
Yeah, thank you so much, Abby. This was awesome.
Thank you so much, Anita. Congrats to the Chiefs for their dynastic win, and to my Rams for a great season of making the playoffs, and to that other team in Santa Clara for a really good effort. Remember, if you can, try and do something unexpectedly kind for someone. Make it a surprise. Till next time, I'm Abhay Dandekar.